FM, The Lakeshore. Listener-supported public radio in Northwest Indiana. WLPR FM, Lowell.
Welcome, Lakeshore listeners. You are listening to Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, and it is currently 7 o'clock. And the program preceding this is Midwest Beat, an hour-long show of music and the people who make it. Today is February 23rd, and on this evening edition of Midwest Beat, Tom Lounges will feature rock vocalist Ricky Warwick of Black Star Riders, discussing that group along with his past groups Thin Lizzy and The Almighty. The main focus will be on Warwick's first new solo album in many years, right after the news on Midwest Beat on Lakeshore Public Radio. Now, here's your headlines.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges. Thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on the dial at 89.1 FM and online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This is Midwest Beat. I'm your host, and the program is all about music and the people who make it. Well, tonight we're going to be taking a call from an Irish rocker, Ricky Warwick. Ricky is well known for his time with the Black Star Riders. He's also been the frontman vocalist of Thin Lizzy, The Almighty, and the New Model Army. But he's got a solo album out now, and we're going to feature that. The album is called When Life Was Hard and Fast. He also has a second companion album called Stairwell Troubadour, which is all classic covers. We're going to focus on the original music from Ricky as we welcome him to the program. Let's open things up by letting the music do the talking. This is the title track of the newly released When Life Was Hard and Fast. Ricky Warwick on Midwest Beat.
Yeah.
title track, When Life Was Hard and Fast. That's new music, Ricky Warwick, and his solo album. As I mentioned on the other side, Ricky's got quite the pedigree in rock and roll. Not only is he out there with the Black Star Riders, but he's also been the front man with Thin Lizzy. He's worked with the Almighty, with their band. He's got a lot of good friends in the rock and roll world, and one of them is sitting in on that, Mr. Joe Elliott of Def Leppard, singing background. He's got lots of good guests. We're going to play some music from this album. We're going to talk to Ricky right now. Ricky, are you with me?
Hey, how are you? How's it going, Tom?
It's going great, and I got to say, I'm very, very impressed with this album.
Oh, man, thank you so much. I'm glad. I'm very proud of it, too.
I like the fact in your press stuff here, you talked about wanting to come up with a new album that was somewhere between Johnny Thunders and Tom Petty. And I thought, what a broad spectrum that is. And I can certainly hear the Johnny Thunders in there and the melodicness of Mr. Petty. That was a broad stroke. How do you feel with it being done now? Do you think you hit that mark that you were shooting for?
You know, those guys are peers to me and their inspiration. Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. You know, they were inspirational to me as a kid growing up amongst many other bands. But when Keith Nelson and I, who co-produced the record with me, sat down, we were like, well, what do we want to try and achieve with this? And we wanted to really just make, without trying to undersell it, a simplistic, in-your-face rock and roll album with great sounding guitars and, you know, big hooky choruses, and nothing too complicated, just something that would people would remember and make them want to get up and move and sing along. And that's what we really tried to do. You know, we want just the pure essence of rock and roll. We wanted to try and capture that, whatever that is.
You mentioned Keith Nelson. Of course, he was on the Sliders for Buck Cherry, and he not only produced this, but he's also a co-writer, and he plays and sings on this.
Yeah, Keith and I handle all the guitar. Keith doesn't do that much singing on it. It's mainly myself with obviously Joe doing the backing vocals on the title track. But Keith co-produced, co-wrote most of the songs with me, and myself and him handles all the guitar duties on the record as well.
How did the two of you team up? Where did the relationship come from? Because it seems to have the right chemistry and the right hooks.
Thank you. It's you know, we haven't been friends for that long, only really about 2.5-3 years. We met, I mean, long story, I'll make it as short as I can. When Damon Johnson left Black Star Riders, we were in the market, obviously, for a new guitar player. A good friend of mine, Richard Fortus, who plays with Guns N' Roses, suggested Keith. And I knew who Keith was, obviously, but I'd never met Keith. So I got his phone number, called him up, arranged to meet him here in L.A. And Keith showed up at the restaurant, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "I'm not the guy for you." I kind of went, "Okay, well, what's going on? Why are we here? You know, what?" And he said, "Look, man," he said, "I really appreciate, I'm honored that you think of me and call me up. I love the band. I really would want to do it," he said, "but I'm just really done with touring. One of the reasons I left Buck Cherry was I just didn't want to go on the road for 6 months a year anymore. But," he said, "I want to tell you in person, you know?" So anyway, I thought that was cool. We hung out, we chatted, we got on like a house on fire, a lot of stuff in common, similar age, similar upbringing, similar taste in music, similar taste in guitars. And he said, "Look, I have a studio, I'm writing, I'm getting into production. Why don't we try writing the song together?" And I said, "Yeah, totally." So a couple of days later, I head over to the studio. We work on a song, which is Fighting Heart, which ends up being on the new album. And I go home with a demo of the song. I'm listening to him going, "You know, that was a good day. I like this guy. You know, we work well together." So I called him up and I went, "Look, I have more than enough ideas to start work on a new solo record. Would you be interested in getting involved with me, co-writing it, co-producing?" He's like, "Let's do it. Let's go." And that's how we met. And, you know, now we're best of buddies.
So obviously this relationship and the recording started pre-COVID. Now that it's out there, how are you going to tour behind it? Are you going to get a second guy, or you think you can twist Keith's arm to do one more tour?
I think I can get Keith maybe to do some U.S. shows. I think that might not be out of the question. European stuff. I have my touring band. It's called the Fighting Hearts, and I go into Ricky Warwick and the Fighting Hearts, and I have a pool of people that I've been lucky enough to use for that. So I've got some guys overseas that I'll probably bring in for that. But I think we could talk Keith into maybe doing some U.S. shows when we get back to playing live.
All right. Was this delayed, this album delayed because of COVID? Did you hold back on it, or was this the planned date?
This was the planned date. Nothing changed at all due to COVID, Tom. We finished the album in April 2019, and I was Black Star Riders had just finished a record prior to me finishing the solo record. Black Star Riders record came out September 2019, we were able to get one European tour in before we went into lockdown. And in 2020, we were supposed to be out on the road the whole time at Black Star Riders last year. Obviously, that didn't happen. So the record was, my solo record was always scheduled for a February 2021 release, and it just didn't make any sense to move it. We just kind of left it where it was, hoping that by the time, you know, February came around, we might be able to get back out and play. Sadly, that's not the case, but we are getting there.
Right, right. That said, are you going to be juggling both bands? Because Black Star Riders, Another State of Grace came out, as you mentioned, right a little before the whole COVID thing hit. Now you've got a new solo album, and you've got to promote both. How are you going to balance that?
Well, I mean, sadly, I think the window of opportunity for Another State of Grace is gone, you know, because I think by the time we get back to playing, it'll be almost 2 years since that album came out. So what we've decided to do with Black Star Riders is just really crack on with the next album. We've already written album number 5, which we'll record over the summer, and that will probably see a release, you know, mid to late 2022, which hopefully will give me the end of this year and the first few months of next year to go out and tour this record.
Now, you have got a lot of famous folks that obviously you've toured with and are friends with. They seem to pop up all over your music. Jumping back real quick to Black Star Riders, Pearl A Day, Meatloaf's daughter, amazing singer-songwriter. I believe she's still married to Scott Ian of Anthrax. Wow, I was so blown away to see her performing with you guys on What Will It Take? How did you get her involved? And are you going to be doing more work with her? Because she kind of fell away from the public eye for a while.
Sure, I think she took a little time out to do, you know, to raise her kid and do that thing. Pearl's a great friend, and so is Scott, and we love him to death. And you know, we ended up working with her on the Heavy Fire album, Black Star Riders album. She sang backing vocals on a song called I'm trying to remember what song she sang on. Testify or Say Goodbye. Yeah, and she did a great job. Jay Rustin, our producer, knew her because he'd worked with Anthrax, and he's also worked with Pearl. And he suggested her. And, you know, when we met, we just got on great. And she's obviously a wonderful singer. And sort of any time now that we feel we need, you know, some really great female backing vocals, Pearl's our sort of go-to person, you know.
You picked a great one, and if it's okay with you, I'm going to play a little bit of that song from Another State of Grace. What will it take?
Please do.
All right, this is Black Star Riders, and sadly we won't get to see them tour behind this album, but look for a new one and check it out. It is available now. It's been on sale for a while on all the usual suspects online, and we're going to find out if it's before we play it. Is it available on vinyl?
The new album?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's available vinyl, colored vinyl too. We've got red vinyl, and we've got limited edition ivory vinyl as well. So there's some pretty cool vinyl out there. But yes, to answer your question, absolutely.
All right. So let's go back to Black Star Riders. We'll be back in just a minute with Ricky.
What will it take for me to make you smile? What will it take for me to make you mad? What will it take? Can we negotiate? What will it take? What will it take? What does it take? Does it take more than a lot? What does it take? Does it take more than we got? What does it take? Can we communicate? What does it take? What does it take? Turn it into something that we want.
What Will It Take? The latest stuff. Don't want to step on that there. The latest stuff from Black Star Riders, Another State of Grace is the name of the album. An album that sadly, like so many things in 2020, kind of got fell between the cracks due to COVID. Didn't get the touring support, but it's out there. And I wanted to play that so that my listeners can understand that that album is out there and it's an incredible record. I think it's more melodic than previous Black Star Riders albums. Ricky, would you agree with that?
I would agree. It's definitely, if not my favorite Black Star Riders album, it's definitely in the top two if I had to pick two out of the four we've done. No disrespect to my bro, Damon Johnson, who I love a lot and was amazing in the band, but with Christian Martucci coming in, Christian's such an incredible personality and guitar player. He really came in and brought something different to the band that worked equally as well and gave us an edge that maybe we just didn't have before.
Okay.
So he's been a great addition to Black Star Riders.
And also Jay, who you mentioned producing for the first time, right, on this one?
Jay's mixed two previous Black Star Riders albums, but this is the first time he handled production duties as well.
Okay, and he was brought in by Scott. Now, let's just educate my listeners a little bit about your history. We're going to go back to the earlier days in a few minutes, but you, for a while, were fronting the touring group of Thin Lizzy, stepping in for the late, great Phil Lynette.
Yeah, I still am. I'm still in Thin Lizzy, yep.
I didn't know they were still planning to do stuff. I thought they had retired.
We do a few shows sort of every couple of years now. The last shows we did were in 2019. We did some European festivals, and there's talk of us doing a few shows next year. So it's not any sort of hardcore touring anymore, but festivals and, you know, a few shows here and there.
Now, why, from a market, I'm putting on my marketer's hat here, why wouldn't you stay with the Thin Lizzy name with Scott and you both in the band, since it is a marquee name and your music is new and moving forward? You could still incorporate the old hits with it, but you chose Black Star Riders. What was the reasoning for that?
The reasoning for that was complete and utter respect for the legacy of Phil.
Okay.
And what Phil stands for and what he means to people. You know, obviously people are aware of Thin Lizzy in the States, probably just most people know Three Boys Are Back in Town, possibly Jailbreak as well. But, you know, everywhere else in the world, Thin Lizzy are a bona fide rock and roll institution, and Phil is iconic. And being Irish myself and growing up with Thin Lizzy and them being my favorite band, they have such a huge impact on me and my life. And singing Phil's songs live and keeping his legacy and his music going is amazing, because people need to hear those songs and they need to go and rediscover what was so great about Phil and the Boys and all those killer albums they made. Recording under that name without Phil is a step too far. And we all feel that and shared that idea that it was too much. It wasn't the right thing to do. It didn't feel right. So we had some songs written, you know, we did think about it, and then when the penny dropped, we just thought, no, we can't do this. We just can't do this. It's not the right thing to do. I sort of said to Scott, I said, well, we've got these songs. They're great. People need to hear them. Let's just put them out. Let's just come up with a band name and put them out, and let's see what happens. People either dig them or they won't, you know, but we feel they're good, and I think they need to be heard. So we came up with the name Black Star Riders. Black Star Riders was born. We put out the first album, All Hell Breaks Loose, and you know, here we are 9 years later, about to make album number five.
Mm-hmm. How have the Thin Lizzy fans and audience embraced Black Star Riders?
They've been amazing. They've been absolutely amazing. You know, I think they've come on this journey with us, because, like I said, we didn't know that first record if it was going to fly, if anybody's really going to care. And the fact that it did so well, you know, people vote with their feet. You know, the fact that people went out and bought it and gave us the opportunity to make album number two, and you can see and hear, as you rightly said earlier on, Tom, you know, the band's grown with each album and found its own identity. I mean, we're at the point now when we tour, we don't, you know, when we put the first record out, we didn't have enough songs to play a full headline set, so we obviously would put some Thin Lizzy songs in the set. That has decreased with every album, to the point where we haven't played any Lizzy songs live for almost 2 or 3 years in the set. It's all Black Star Riders.
You are juggling a lot, my friend. Thin Lizzy's still doing it. You've got the Ricky Warwick solo stuff. You've got Black Star Riders. when you were writing this this solo album, we'll get back to this because this is your new one.
Sure.
When you were writing this, what makes this a solo song or solo record or material for that versus Black Star Riders? There's a lot of similarities.
It's funny you're saying that. I'm listening to What Will It Take that you just played by Black Star Riders. I'm thinking that could very easily be on the new solo record.
It could.
You know, that's the problem. It's not a problem. It's a great problem to have. I can't separate myself from myself. You know, as the main songwriter in Black Star Riders, and obviously when I'm doing the solo stuff, the main songwriter there, you just can't separate yourself from yourself. But what I can do, I go with a gut feeling, and I follow my gut. If I'm writing something and I feel it has a certain groove or a certain feeling, I suddenly imagine what Scott Gorham, what Christian Martucci, Chad, what Robbie Crane, what they're going to bring to the song. I go, that's a Black Star Riders song. I can hear the guys interpreting that and running with it and making it into something that's going to be really cool for Black Star Riders. The solo stuff, when I'm writing something for the solo stuff, you know, usually I just go, okay, you know, I think I want to try and finish this as much as I can on my own or finish the whole thing on my own and maybe go, you know, Black Star Riders have a style and a sound I think that people expect, and that's great. I'm very, very proud of that. But we can't deviate too far outside that because, we could, but we don't want to because we want to give the people what they want. The solo stuff, all the roads are open. You can go anywhere, you can do anything, you can have anybody you want play on it. And I think that's what appeals to me about it. But in saying that, Tom, there has been a few instances where I sat on the tour bus and I've played, you know, some of the solo stuff. And Scott Gorham's kind of looked at me, he gives me that raised eyebrow look going, really? You kept that one for yourself? Okay. You know, it hasn't happened too often, but it's happened.
All right. Andy Taylor plays on this as well from Duran Duran. You wouldn't think a Duran Duran would fit your style. You're a little heavier than those guys. They're very poppy. That was an interesting, I'd Rather Be Hit is the song. Yeah. But tell me about that, how Andy got involved. And again, you have so many guests on these different projects. Is there anyone, Dizzy Reed's on from Guns N' Roses on here as well? Did you have anyone say, man, I'd love to do it, but I can't make it, my schedule's tight, or COVID's got me locked up? Was there anyone missing in action?
No, I didn't. You know, once again, the album was made pre-COVID. Obviously,
that's true.
With the joy of the internet now, people have their home studio, so it's a case of just sending a file over to somebody, and they do their part in their little studio at home and send it back to you. So that's made that part of it real easy. But when the songs were finished, I definitely had people in mind. But these are really close friends to me that I approached. These are guys that I've worked with on some of their records. I signed the Def Leppard album. Joe Elliott produced my first two solo records.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Taylor, for instance. Andy Taylor is a very misunderstood and underrated musician. Andy's a phenomenal guitar player and a great singer. And I mean, I love Duran Duran. I thought they wrote great classic pop songs. But I love the Power Station. I love what he did with them. You know, Robert Palmer and you know, Tony Thompson when he put the part, and John Taylor, the Power Station, he got, that was incredible. I've been working with Andy on his solo stuff. Andy has a solo record coming out later this year, and I've co-written four or five songs with him on his solo record. So while we were doing that, I was kind of putting When Life Is Hard and Fast together, and I was like, hey, bro, you know, if you want to return the favor, will you play on a track for me when I get this thing done? And he's like, yeah, send it over. So that's really where the connection is there. And again, with Dizzy, I co-wrote a song on Dizzy's solo record that came out a couple of years ago and played guitar on it for him. And he's just a good friend. He is here in LA. So Dizzy actually did come down to the studio and physically play with us while we're in the studio, which was great. And I'm just very blessed that these guys are first and foremost my friends, Tom, but they just happen to be amazing, very talented, wonderful musicians too.
Did you record in LA or did you record in Ireland? Because I think you're between both countries, aren't you? Still?
No, predominantly home's LA for me now. I live in LA. I go back to Ireland a lot, you know, to visit. I tour there a fair bit, but home is LA. No, we recorded everything here in North Hollywood.
Okay. Do you want to play that one with Andy? I'd Rather Be Hit.
Yeah, let's do it, man. It's a killer guitar solo. Let the people hear it. That'd be great.
All right. Now, this has a little backstory behind it. It's got a political kind of theme. We'll have you talk about that afterwards. But listeners, listen to this song and see what you think.
Trap. 'Cause it's all an illusion. They give you the blues, call it fake news, rise above this confusion. You can't fix yourself by breaking somebody else. That ain't the solution. I'd rather be hit by an man than hooked by any woman. Rather sell my soul for a piece of hope than give my heart away for nothing.
Rather be hit by any man than hurt by any woman. That is new music. It's off Ricky Warwick's When Life Was Hard and Fast. It came out the end of January. It's out now. I love some of the lines in the lyrics here. Why are we so scared and visually impaired that we can't see what they're doing? Now, when I first listened to this song, I was thinking, oh, hit by a woman, hurt by a woman. Okay, it's a love song gone wrong. And then I started listening to your lyrics, Ricky, and I realized, this is like the world at large. I mean, you talk about fake news in here, and clearly you're talking about the politicians.
Sadly, I am. I mean, you really hit the nail on the head there, Tom. You know, growing up in Northern Ireland in the 70s and 80s, and seeing firsthand, my own family included, what religious bigotry, sectarianism, hatred, and negativity can do to a country and to a society, and it's a dead end road, and there is no light at the end of that tunnel. You know, I was brought up a blue collar working class in a family, you know, taught that you had to work really hard for everything, and I'm dismayed that people just put their life in the hands of politicians so easily without questioning why. What am I doing? Is this, you know, is this person got my best interests? You know, and I feel that so many politicians are dragging us backwards instead of moving us forwards, mm-hmm. and dragging us back down that road with divisions and hatred and negativity, because there's nothing at the end of it. You know, the metaphor, it's a metaphor, I'd rather be hit, Ben. It's a lesser of two evils.
Right.
And I think it's really just about thinking for yourself and questioning everything. I'm one of these people, I believe that revolution starts in the mirror. And I believe that's where it begins. And I believe you can look at yourself in the mirror and look at yourself with a straight face and question your own integrity and what you believe. That there's a line in there, you know, you can't fix yourself by breaking somebody else. And so many political leaders seem to asphyxiate on the downtrodden and people that are struggling, and the people that probably need the help the most. And it's just wrong. It's not even politics. Take the politics out of it. It's morality, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like we're lacking that in society today, even more than we ever were, you know. And it makes me sad because, like I said, having lived through in Northern Ireland, and thankfully Northern Ireland's in a better place, it's still not perfect. It's still a lot of bigotry and hatred, even with the peace process going on over there. I'm like, when are we going to get it that these killing and hatred and bigotry and racism, it doesn't work.
Right.
It's a dead end. It's a dead end. Hatred begats hatred, and it's no good. It's no good.
Like John Lennon, John Lennon said, give peace a chance, and we haven't done that yet, not in any earnest approach.
I agree. Absolutely agree.
This album, again, a lot of it was written with Keith Nelson, your co-writer on a lot of these songs. Is that to suggest that these songs were kind of written as a group with this album in mind as far as a cohesive piece? Or were some of these songs older songs that were either sitting around or that were maybe from Black Star Riders that didn't quite make it? You mentioned about Scott saying, well, you're holding out on me there.
Sure.
What was the birth of these songs as a unit?
None of them are leftover Black Star Riders songs, Tom. Like I said before, I know straight away. I'm one of these people, if I'm working on a song and I'm not feeling it, I'm not going to spend days trying to beat the song up to get it to a place where it's good. I'll instantly leave it and go on to something that I know is going to work or I've got a feeling for straight away. So there's nothing that's really left over. So when I started writing, so I had quite a lot of them together before I got together with Keith. But Keith, I write all the lyrics. But Keith came in and would say, hey, you know, we can get a far better chord structure for that chorus. And mm-hmm. I go, okay. And he, nine times out of ten, the guy's right. He's a hell of a guitar player and got a great ear for melody. That's the strength that Keith would bring to the songs. I was bringing in half finished songs, certainly lyrically finished. But then Keith and I would sit down and just go through, am I singing the strongest melody? Can we get a better bridge? Is the chorus euphoric and uplifting enough? Can we? That's the beauty of Keith Nelson right there. He's great at that. And he would make some great calls and some great changes in the songs that just elevated them up a whole new level.
Okay, let's talk about the songwriting process. How you if you look back to some of the earlier albums, Tattoos and Alibis, sure. For instance, and you look at that was the early 2000s, and you look at When Life Was Hard and Fast as the evolution of your songwriting. Do you sometimes cringe when you listen to the early stuff, or do you think it holds up? Because we all do that. I mean, as a radio guy, I listen to some old demos, or a writer, I look at my old columns, and I'm like, God, did I really publish that? What's it like for you?
I love that question. That's just a great question. I've learned to be okay with it. I've learned to go, you're capturing where you're at that moment in time, and I think that's how you have to look at it. That's where you were. That's who you were and what you were and how you were behaving when you wrote that song. So just try and remember that when you're listening back to it. I mean, it's definitely a few lines, a few lyrics where I've gone, really? You let that one go? You know, what were you thinking? But then that's where my head is at. So you learn from it. Songwriting to me is like anything else. The more you do it, the more you work at your art and the more you put into it, the better you get at it. And I feel that that's been the case with me over the last 30 years.
Do you still resurrect some of the early songs in your live shows, or do you focus on the newer stuff?
No. When I go out and play solo, I'll still play some Almighty songs, absolutely, because people still want to hear them. And I'll play a couple of Black Star Rider songs, and might even throw in a Lizzie song amongst all the solo stuff. So I try and cover sort of all the bases when I'm going out doing the solo stuff. But I treat it as a job, Tom, because it is a job. It's a job that I'm very lucky and blessed to have. But I get up in the morning and go to my studio and go to work, stay there most of the day and try and write something. Even if at the end of the day, what I've written, I've gone, oh, that was a waste of the day. Mm-hmm. At least I've played guitar. At least I've sang. At least I've tried to be creative. At least I feel like I've put in a day's work. I'm not one of these guys. I've tried it. I actually tried it last year. We go out to the Joshua Tree Desert a lot here, me and the family. We love it out there. And I sort of said to my wife, I'm going to go out, rent a cabin for a week and just go off to the desert and just write. And she was like, okay, So off I went, guitar in hand. I came up with nothing. I mean, I just sat in the desert and drank beer and looked at the stars and went for walks and absolutely nothing. And then bring me back to the carnage, you know, of being at home with the kids and, you know, everything that comes with that and the chaos going on in the house. And I can thrive off that. I can, you know, before the pandemic, I can go, okay, I've 9 o'clock, my daughter's in class and it's 9 o'clock. I can, you know, I've got 3 hours till I need to pick her up and it's all right now. And then I love all that. It seems to really make me work and knowing I've got limitations on my time.
Okay. When you started, what inspired you? Is this something in your DNA? Is the Warwick family gifted with music, or are you kind of the rebel son that said, I'm going to do this and not follow the family business? Or is this the family business?
No, the family business was farming. You know, my dad was a farmer. I left school at 15 and came home and worked on the farm. And that was mapped out for me. I was going to be a farmer. We had a small farm in Ireland and then later in Scotland when we moved to Scotland. You know, grew vegetables. We had all, predominantly chickens. We had like 60,000 chickens. That was going to be my life. That was
wow.
I'm the only son. So that was it. You know, as soon as I could leave school and help on the farm, that was it. I was out of school. I was working, driving tractors and doing all that stuff. But my dad, who doesn't have a musical note in his head, saw how much I wanted to be successful as a musician and how much effort I put into it and always encouraged me. Never said, you know, you can't be doing that because you have a farm here that you've got to one day run. He never ever put that pressure on me, which I thought was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Always supported me until I was able to sort of sign, you know, my first sort of professional contract at 19 and start making some money. And he was just like, go do it. I had his full blessing, which was unbelievable. My mom is very musical. She was a great piano player, and she's a great harmonica player and a great singer. So I think that's where the music comes into it.
Okay. Your daughter clearly has gotten the DNA gene from you because she's featured on here. Tell me a little bit about Pepper. Is this a one-time thing? Is this something she's looking to pursue?
Thank you. I hope not. It is at the minute because she's 13 now and I'm the most uncool person in the world at the minute. but when we had her in the studio to sing on Time Don't Seem to Matter, she was 11 and she was really just starting to get into music. She started playing the ukulele. She's now playing guitar and keyboards and she has a beautiful voice. And, you know, there's always music on in our house, Tom. We didn't push any of our kids into anything. We just let them suss it out for themselves. And she's really putting the hours in her bedroom, you know, practicing and singing. And when I wrote the song, I was like, hey, kiddo, you know, this is about you. Why don't you come in and sing it with me? And she did, and it was great. And we had a great day hanging out with her in the studio. But she's, you know, she's a terrible 13 now, and she's, you know, full of angst and rebelling and like we all were, which I wouldn't want it any other way. So now the record's coming. She's like, oh, my God, what are you saying about me? You're so embarrassing. I can't believe you've kept that on, you know. So, you know, secretly, I think she likes it, but she's trying to be cool.
Right. Do you think she's going to move into the music business, do you think?
Yeah, you know, who knows? I hope so, you know. I'm not just saying this. I think she's talented enough. And she's certainly putting the work in at the minute. So, you know, again, whatever she wants to do, I'll support her.
All right. Well, let's play that song. Time Don't Seem to Matter. It's track number 6 on the album. And we'll talk again with Ricky after this. Stay with me on Midwest Beats, Lakeshore Public Radio.
Time don't seem to matter when I'm alone with you. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. This is all I want to do. If wishes were like horses, then beggars they would ride. If distance wasn't measured, I'd always be by your side. We're all searching for the answers. There won't be any book. find you. You're always in the last place that I look. Some nights I wake up dreaming, wondering where you are. I don't wanna lose the moon when I'm counting all the stars. We're all searching for the answers. There won't be any good. Find you. You're always in the last place that I look. I hate to leave everything that I am is forever yours to keep. We're all searching for the answer. There won't be any good.
The softer side of my guest, Ricky Warwick, a dyed-in-the-wool rock and roller, but it doesn't get any better than that. How do you top a line like, I don't want to lose the moon when I'm counting on all the stars?
Thank you.
Any parent takes that to heart.
That's a good one. Yeah, you know, it's one of those songs that just, when they come along, you just grab onto them with everything you've got. I mean, I was back home in Belfast in Ireland. We'd been out on the road for quite a while. We had a little bit of downtime. I went back to Belfast to hang with some family. You know, and the only downside to what I do is that I'm on the road a lot, you know, when we don't have this pandemic. And, you know, I'm away for birthdays. I'm away for Thanksgiving. I've missed so many, and it's tough, you know. And I wanted to write a song for Pepper just to tell her that, you know, how I felt about it all. But I also wanted to sort of say, look, it's not the quantity of time we have together, it's the quality of time. And, you know, when I'm home, I do my best to make up for it. And it just really came out of me really, really quickly, Tom. The whole thing was written in about 10 minutes. And I sent it to Keith. And Keith, again, as I said earlier, he made a couple of great calls on some chord changes in the chorus, which made it even sweeter. Mm-hmm. And it's a funny story. The guitar and the vocal is actually a demo. We did the demo, and I wasn't feeling great that day. I had a really bad head cold. And Keith was like, no, let's do a demo of Time Don't Seem to Matter. I'm like, bro, I don't really want to sing right now. I'm not feeling great. He's like, it doesn't matter. It's just a demo. Nobody will hear it. And he set up a mic, and I sat down and played it on the guitar and did it in one take. And we listened back to it. And whatever way the head cold was affecting the resonance in my voice, it was kind of cool. And we went, okay, you know, that's going to be hard to beat. And we left it, and then we came to re-record it for the album. We set up the mics and everything in the studio. We couldn't recreate it. So we looked at each other and went, let's just use a demo. And that's exactly what we did.
Wow. That is one of those songs that when she walks down the aisle, they're going to play.
Oh, you know, I haven't thought of that. I hope so. That would be amazing.
What a gift a father could give to a child, a living song, a song that will always be there, no matter what. We don't have a lot of time left. I do want to touch on the fact that you have also created, and I don't know if this is new or just something that came out, a companion piece, I guess you'd say, Stairwell Troubadour, which is you doing some songs I would not imagine you doing. Britney Spears, Eddie Cochran, you know, Dead or Alive. I mean, they're all here. What prompted that? And is that a new recording, or is that just a collection of stuff that you thought would be fun to release?
It's old, and I thought it would be fun to release it. It's about 6-7 years old. It was done as part of a VIP limited release campaign a few years ago to people that were buying some of the VIP stuff on the last record. They got this limited edition disc. So when my record label asked me for some bonus material this time around, my manager reminded me that, you know, this had only ever been released in very limited quantities before. He said, why not tag this on as the extra disc? And I did them as sort of weekly kind of cover versions to the people back then, and then went in and recorded them as an album. And I, you know, it's a bit of fun. It's obviously there's a lot of artists on there that you would expect me to cover, like Johnny Cash, like the Ramones, you know, Bottle Rockets, Elvis, stuff like that mm-hmm. that I grew up with and that I love. But the Britney Spears and Dead or Alive, I mean, I growing up in the late 80s, 90s, I couldn't go into a goth or rock club or a punk club without hearing that song. And I just loved it. I just loved it. And I think it's just to demonstrate that a good song is a good song. If you strip it down mm-hmm. and it's well written and it's a well-crafted pop song, which I'm a sucker for. You know, my favorite genre of music is Tamla Motown. I mean, I'm a huge Motown fan, and those songs are so well-crafted and such great pop songs. I think I want to demonstrate that, you know, hey, a Britney Spears song can work really well if you just play it as a folk song or mm-hmm. and give it a little bit of an edge, you know? You know, it's ironic, but it's a bit of fun, you know?
Have you gotten good response on that?
I have. You know, I went out a few years ago and did some solo shows in the UK, and I put that in a set, and I played a bar in Nottingham, England, and it's quite a big bar over there. It's a biker bar. It's called Rock City. It's a great club. A lot of bikers go there. And I think I had about 400 or 500 bikers singing along to Oops, I Did It Again, which was one of my greatest achievements, to have a room full of bikers with their fists in the air singing Oops, I Did It Again. So.
Wow. I do. It took me by surprise when Chip said, oh, by the way, here's this extra thing. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So here's this this tattooed tough guy belting out some of these great songs in such a style I would not imagine. But you nail it. It's good. It's interesting. It's fun.
Thank you.
You mentioned Black Star Riders working on another album soon. Do you have a target date on that?
We're hoping to get in over the summer in Los Angeles. And obviously, we're just waiting for that everybody can fly in and all that kind of stuff is okay again. Scott Gorham's over in London, you know, Chatter Drummer's up in Pennsylvania, Christian's up in Oregon. So we're kind of all over the place. We need to be able to get together safely and get into the studio, obviously. We're hoping that will be the summer, the way it's looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's get it recorded and let's hopefully get it out 2022. I'm thinking mid to maybe fall 2022.
Okay.
I hope.
In between, yep. Are you talking with Scott about maybe doing some Lizzie dates, especially maybe here in Chicago? That would be great.
Yes, there is talk of some Lizzie dates next year. You know, they just had the box set and the reissues done. I know Scott's keen to get out and do something for that. And like I said, I want to try and definitely do some dates with the new solo record.
Okay.
With my band, The Fighting Hearts, absolutely too. So, yeah. I mean, as soon as we can get back out there and it's safe, I'm all about it.
All right. Keep up with Ricky at rickywarwick.com, and that's Ricky with a Y, rickywarwick.com. You can get the new album. You can check out all the merch and find out more about them. And, of course, when tours start, it'll be there. So, Ricky, thank you for joining me. I've picked a song so far. What would you like to end with? What should we play you'd like listeners to hear?
I'd like to hear something from the new album. It would be really good if we could play, how about You Don't Love Me?
You Don't Love Me. Okay, we can do that. That's track number two.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ricky. I appreciate it. I'll be talking to you soon again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. A lot of fun.
All righty. We'll do it again. Thank you. Here we go. Again, When Life Was Hard and Fast is the album, available on vinyl, CD, and digital. And this is our final song this evening. Thank you for listening. I'll catch you on the rebound. Till then, adios. Stay safe. Stay warm.
For sure.